What happens when the promise of progress reveals itself as illusion? When marches and speeches and hard-won legislation leave the fundamental architecture of injustice intact? James Baldwin spent his life wrestling with this question, and his insights feel uncomfortably relevant today. Through his eyes, we see America not as it pretends to be, but as it actually is, a nation built on what he called the lie. This lie isn't just about historical denial or political spin. It's the deep structural belief that white lives matter more than others, a value gap so embedded in American consciousness that it shapes everything from housing policy to whose children get to grow up feeling safe. Baldwin understood that until we confront this lie directly, we're doomed to repeat the same tragic cycles, generation after generation. We celebrate founding fathers while footnoting their slaveholding. We teach the Civil War as states' rights, not ownership of people. We frame Reconstruction as failure rather than the terror campaign that overthrew multiracial democracy. This isn't forgetfulness. It's the lie constantly reshaping history to preserve national innocence. Baldwin witnessed this machinery in 1963, meeting Howard University activists who'd been beaten and jailed for demanding dignity. He promised at dawn, if they refused society's degrading definitions, he'd never betray them through his writing. It was love and recognition of his responsibility to disturb America's comfortable sleep. The lie reveals itself clearest in moments of potential transformation. Obama's presidency suggested racial progress, but the response was visceral terror at losing racial privilege. This fear elected a president promising to restore old hierarchies by making America great again. Baldwin would have recognized this instantly. White identity in America has never been rooted in culture or heritage, but in the material and psychological benefits of being deemed superior to Black people. Baldwin didn't just observe America's racial violence, he bore witness to it, transforming trauma into truth-telling that refused to let others look away. In 1957, 15-year-old Dorothy Counts tried to integrate a Charlotte high school. White students hurled slurs, threw objects, and spat on her while police stood by. After 4 days, her family withdrew her for safety. Baldwin later claimed photographs of her ordeal prompted his return from Paris, except he'd already returned. His memory had rearranged the facts. This misremembering reveals something crucial. Trauma fragments memory. What one does not remember is the serpent in the garden of one's dreams, Baldwin warned. The terrors we try to forget continue moving us about like chess pieces, shaping our present whether we acknowledge them or not. America has never directly confronted its racial trauma because the lie won't permit it. We minimize atrocities by blaming fringe actors or claiming different historical values. Without mechanisms like truth and reconciliation commissions, we seek absolution without admission of guilt, historical gaslighting that doesn't just dishonor the past, but guarantees we'll recreate its horrors in new forms. When Baldwin introduced Martin Luther King Jr. at a 1968 fundraiser, he didn't offer triumphant rhetoric. Instead, he recounted activists beaten with chains, going to jail, marching up and down those dusty highways, while nobody heard and nobody cared. 2 weeks later, he wore the same dark suit to King's funeral. By 1968, King faced an impossible position, unable to deliver the transformation Black America sought, yet unwilling to embrace more radical measures. A younger generation questioned whether moral appeals could work when white conscience had proven so reliably dormant. Baldwin occupied treacherous ground, rejected by white liberals for his ingratitude, and criticized by Black militants who included him in their bootlickers gallery. He recognized that moral arguments seemed inadequate as cities burned, yet he refused to abandon the moral dimension entirely. "I would like us to do something unprecedented," he wrote, "to create ourselves without finding it necessary to create an enemy. What kind of human beings we aspire to be matters as much as policy and power." In August 2017, James Fields Jr. drove his car into counter-protesters at a white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, killing Heather Heyer. The rally opposed removing a Confederate statue, revealing how battles over history shape our present. White nationalists celebrated these monuments as tributes to white supremacy, while others claimed heritage. Historians showed most weren't contemporaneous memorials. They were erected decades later as ideological symbols of lost cause mythology, denying slavery's centrality to the Civil War. Trump's equation of Confederate generals with the Founding Fathers revealed complex questions about confronting history. The issue isn't simply whether statues stay or go, but how we tell America's story without glossing over cruelty. Princeton faced its reckoning when students staged a 33-hour sit-in demanding acknowledgement of Woodrow Wilson's racist legacy. Though celebrated for elevating Princeton, Wilson was a virulent segregationist who reversed federal integration progress. The university kept Wilson's name, but added signage acknowledging his racism. We must get facts right, or risk perpetuating what Du Bois called lies agreed upon. Washington and Jefferson owned slaves. Jefferson exploited Sally Femings and questioned Black biological inferiority. Facts alone aren't enough. Interpretation matters. How we tell America's story reflects the society we aspire to create. Baldwin found refuge in Istanbul for nearly a decade. Unlike Paris, he arrived without fame, finding quiet space to write Another Country and The Fire Next Time. When he appeared at friend Engin Cesar's door in 1961, nearly penniless and exhausted, Cesar offered shelter. I saved Jimmy in a very, very bad period in his life. For Baldwin, elsewhere was any place, physical or metaphorical, affording space to breathe and refuse society's deadly assumptions. He never learned Turkish, moving through tea houses and bookshops in relative silence. This silence enabled him to hear his own language and feel his grief more deeply. Baldwin rejected the expatriate label. Black people were already natally exiled, in but not of America. He used France and Istanbul to reorient himself toward home. I was driven to Europe, and my position is misleading. I'm not a European. What I mainly learned was about my country, my own past, and my own language. We must seek our own elsewhere, not necessarily through physical departure, but by creating spaces to breathe and think amid chaos. This elsewhere emerges when we cultivate communities of love that allow us to imagine different ways of being together. At Montgomery's National Memorial for Peace and Justice, visitors walk a path designed for healing. Haunting sculptures of chained slaves lead to 800 steel monuments representing counties where lynchings occurred. As the floor descends, these monuments remain suspended above, creating the unsettling impression of hanging bodies. The memorial confronts America's traumatic history directly, offering what its creator calls a sequential path to reconciliation. You can't have reconciliation without the truth. Baldwin's Begin Again concept demands we free ourselves from the lie and reimagine America's fundamental values. After failing two previous moral reckonings, the Civil War and the Black Freedom Struggle, we face a third, requiring more than changing laws or trusting politicians. We must eliminate the belief that white people matter more, or we'll repeat our ugly cycles. Despite America's betrayals, Baldwin believed we could be better. We must walk through the ruins, confront our terror, and expose the lie corrupting American life. The enslaved survived by imagining the world as it could be, finding power in love and imagination. Baldwin wants us to imagine ourselves without enemies, to become a new creation, reflecting a new America where Black children aren't born in exile and everyone can finally feel at home.